Welcome to the podcast. Now, it may sound like I'm in a bad mood, and it's probably because of Stu. We started I started with great intentions to have fun. It was Helium Thursday.
Sure did, yeah.
And Stu wanted no part of it.
You did.
You didn't even smile. You didn't laugh. None of it during Helium Thursday. And you'll have to be a judge whether Helium Thursday should reappear again or not. I think it was fantastic. Stu was like, oh, that's so childish.
I never said anything like that.
Yes, you did.
But I appreciate your very poor retelling of the story, which you also ended the show on a poor retelling of another story.
Nope.
So this is kind of what you do.
Nope.
Hopefully you're a little bit more accurate when talking about
important things. Can you
shut up for a minute? Like packing the court. We had a Joe Biden clip about packing the court.
Whatever.
Back in 1983.
Whatever. We also had the host of Red Pill America on. It's a podcast series. Really good. Talking about the virtual organism that is Google and Facebook and what the power of these tech companies are going to look like in the future. Also, I saw a great movie, Brexit. I saw it on Amazon. It's with Wilhelm Cumberbatch.
It's not who it's with.
Whatever.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Whatever. Maybe if I said it in helium,
then it would be hilarious. Sure,
it would be. Trust me, that one works just as well as Hickenlooper, which, by the way, we get into with Hickenlooper. You don't want to miss that. All of this, and so much more. The movie about Brexit, you can't miss. What do you pull from it? All on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, Stu.
Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm pretty good. At least I haven't had my home stolen.
That's
you know.
That's true, Glenn. You have home title lock, so.
Yeah, so I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, is that why you're laughing at people who've been
victim of this
crime?
Well, yeah, because I've gone down to the courthouse, and I'm just I'm stealing everybody's homes because it's so easy to do. $40 and I can do it.
Yeah, you just got a fake notary stamp, forge a couple documents. And
so
then
it's like Monopoly. I've got all of the houses on my street.
Really?
Yeah,
I don't think you should admit that.
Really? Mm. Oh. Get your $100 search for free when you sign up Home Title Lock. This is a really bad thing. Fastest growing crime, according to the FBI, where they can steal your home. You don't know about it for quite some time. And then the longer it goes on, the worse it is. People have lost their homes because of this. You can have one person guard. The only people that do it, HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Go there now. All right, let's take a look at the candidate list. We may need helium. I'm not sure yet, Sarah. We may need helium for this. Whew, because look at the wonderful list of candidates that we have coming our way.
And I don't think we need the helium quite yet, but there's a we've been doing this. We have a beta, and I don't mean this as it relates to Beto, but a beta version of our power rankings. If you are a fan of sports, you'll see this all across all the leagues. They do like the ESPN power rankings of the NBA and mm-hmm. what teams are the best teams in the league, which ones are the worst. And so we've done this with candidates. Mm-hmm. We've got a formula that takes into account about 30 different categories between polling, fundamentals, fundraising, various different things. And so we have an updated list that we've just put out. Again, and we're not completely final with the formula. We're still working through that. Would you like to go through this here, Glenn?
Sure, yes. I'm.
We have there's basically kind of five tiers of candidates right now.
Yes.
You have the front runners. You have those that got a shot.
Yeah.
You have those who, I mean, if everything goes right,
yeah,
maybe.
Right.
Then you have the fourth category, which is like, probably not. And then you have the fifth category, which is like, I mean, come on. What are you doing?
Well, I think that's where everybody put Donald Trump last time.
That is exactly.
I mean, with the exception of a handful of people, that everybody was like, come on.
Right, and that's why it adapts. Right. It takes the moment. It looks at the polling. It looks at all the stuff at that moment. It's a snapshot.
Right. Okay, go ahead.
So very bottom category. It's a 0 to 100 scale.
Uh-huh.
Between 17 and 20, you have Marianne Williamson and John Delaney. They are in the very bottom category.
Marianne Williamson, the guru?
Yes, the guru. She's really running for president. It's an interesting one because there's not a crazy... there's a couple of scenarios that actually could give her rise in that she's like a Kardashian's guru, uh-huh. for example. If yeah. Kim Kardashian comes out and starts tweeting about her candidacy 100 times.
She, you know what? She is. Right. She should be the Oprah guru.
The Oprah candidate, right?
Oprah loves her.
Yeah.
Just loves her.
She is, actually has a very big social following. She's the one of these like new age gurus that's been on all those shows. And that's not your world.
Right.
Because it's certainly not mine. But if it's not your world, you might not be aware that she actually has some reach. Whether she turns into a candidate, I think she would need her celebrity friends to really pitch for her. Okay, next category, which is, you know, probably not going to happen, guys. We have Andrew Yang, Tulsi Gabbard, Pete Buttigieg, Jay Inslee, John Hickenlooper. They're all between on our scoreboard between 23 and 33. So, again, this is a 0 to 100 scale. They're towards the bottom of this. You know, I don't know if you see. Do you see anyone out of there? I mean, Andrew Yang has made some news, but I don't think he's
not
coming out of
news.
That.
Not necessarily good news.
Right. I mean, Pete Buttigieg is a favorite. I would not rule him out for a vice presidential candidate. It would be the first openly gay vice presidential candidate on either party. I think the Democrats would like to set that precedent.
I'm so sick of
this. All they care about is identity.
I know. I'm so sick of it.
What group can we, you know, can we take?
Can we use?
Yeah, exactly.
Can we use
for our own benefit? Yeah. Okay, so next, now we're up to, if everything goes right, maybe, which is Kirsten Gillibrand and Julian Castro. Now, the exact opposite of everything going right is happening with Kirsten Gillibrand. I mean, this is a zero of a candidacy so far. I mean, she has been invisible. She has had no success. She's showing up south of Tulsi Gabbard in some of these polls. Mm-hmm. This is not a good start for her. You never know. Maybe she could turn it around. But I think I honestly would not. If I had to pick right now the first candidate of any note to drop out of this race, it's her. This has just been a disastrous launch for Gillibrand, who's coming. You know, it's a New York senator. You'd think
she's
there'd be some
a disaster for a while, don't you think? She's just a zero.
She kind of tied herself into the news with the whole Me Too thing. She was very publicly.
Which is.
She went after Al Franken, by the way, and one of her big issues within the party is that.
Yeah.
Because people didn't like that the Me Too standards got applied to their guy.
I think I think the Me Too thing is so yesterday that it's just, you're just, if you were big in that movement, in politics, I think that's just. It turned scummy. I mean, it was just, it could have been good, but it became so political and so, marked in time.
Everyone knows the underlying premise is good,
yes.
Right? That
right.
Women, if they are abused, should have justice.
Correct.
However, people who jumped in to use it for a political tool don't come out looking so nice.
She's a zero.
Okay, so the next one is, they've got a chance. Three here in this category with a 48 score is Elizabeth Warren, 50, Amy Klobuchar, 54, Cory Booker. Those are the three in that category.
Okay, out of that, Cory Booker, nope.
I don't think it's happening.
He's just a fake. He's just a fake.
Yes.
He feels fake. That Spartacus moment, I would love for him to be the candidate because he is so easy to mock and make fun of.
He is really funny.
He's just a total fake. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, when you're running in a field with Pocahontas, I mean, fake is where it's at. Elizabeth Warren, zero chance. Zero chance.
Again, I've stopped saying zero chance. Over the years, I remember the first time I said I will never say again there's a zero chance is when Howard Dean lost Iowa. He was ahead by like a zillion points a week before that election in my recollection. And then all of a sudden he lost, and all of a sudden the whole thing fell apart.
Yeah.
He was killing it in that race for months.
Yeah.
And then he was just gone after one speech. I mean, remember, he lost Iowa before that speech, so that was not the cause of the campaign.
Yeah, why did that fall apart?
I mean, you know, Kerry just beat him. I think, you know, Dean had a lot of the grassroots momentum and a lot of the far, far left. Now, of course, Howard Dean would be an ultra-conservative in this year's lineup.
Oh, my gosh.
An ultra-conservative.
Oh, my gosh.
Not only would he not be allowed to be the progressive candidate, I don't think he'd be allowed in the party.
Yeah. I have something really good to share with you about, you know, the masks coming off. I have something really good to share with you today.
All right, and the final tier is our front runners. Yeah. So in third place as of right now, according to the Glenn Beck Program's candidate power ratings, Beto O'Rourke is, or Bob Frank O'Rourke is his real name. He's at a 65 on this 0 to 100 scale. Kamala Harris at 67, and first place Bernie Sanders, 69. Now, again, Joe Biden has not announced yet, so he's not included in this. He will, I would be very surprised if he's not leading this once he does announce. But, you know, who knows how long that lasts.
Joe Biden is going to be, I mean, I have no idea how this is, because they're just eating their own. But Joe Biden is the one that could unite everybody that is a Democrat, and they could say, oh, you know what, our party hasn't gone crazy.
Right. Our gives party them an hasn't excuse.
Gone crazy. Gives them an excuse. It's Joe Biden. He's not crazy, blah, blah, blah. It's who he puts on the under ticket. And I'm sorry, but Joe Biden was the most progressive in the Senate before he became vice president.
At his point the other day when he said, I'm the most progressive person running for president. I mean, the person who might run for president.
Right.
That whole moment is true. People forget that he was a...
I know.
The thing is, he's been around a long time. He's 144 years old. So, you know, back in, you know, 1896, his policies kind of seem conservative compared to what where the party is today. You know, when he said things like, and all of his old stances, we have one today, I think. Do we have this 1983 video clip here? We play this real quick. This is Joe Biden in 1983 on the Supreme Court.
President Roosevelt clearly had the right to send to the United States Senate and the United States Congress a proposal to pack the court. It was totally within his right to do that. He violated no law. He was legalistically absolutely correct, but it was a bonehead idea. It was a terrible, terrible mistake to make.
No.
And
no,
it
Joe.
Put in question for an entire decade the independence of the most significant body, including the Congress, in my view, the most significant body in this country, the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
No. Well, first of all, no. But secondly, you're not allowed to be against court packing now.
Nope.
Now it's like a main plank in the Democratic Party.
But can you bring that video back up for a second? Because he's changed. He's flip-flopped on positions on something else, too. If you look at the picture of the video of Joe Biden, go ahead and roll that, please.
President Roosevelt clearly had the right.
You can cut the sound. He was also anti-hair plug at that point.
Oh, yeah.
If you look, he clearly didn't have any hair plugs at that point. And
in 1983, I would not have guessed. I would have guessed that was a pre-1983 job.
Yeah, it did look like it. It was like, it looks like one of those jobs where, remember when they first came out and they were like, just like, cornrows. They just took a stalk of corn and just planted it in your head. It's so bizarre. I would have thought that as well. But that's a good look there on Joe. When I come back, I want to share this. You know, I said at some point the masks will come off. I have a couple of good friends that send me old books and everything else. They sent me something last night, and I want to share what they sent. Because it shows where we are. It's a little bit of history that was foreshadowing today with the guy that everyone says is the architect of where we are today.
The best of the Glenn Beck Program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. It's Helium Thursday. And Stu has already wrecked it. I don't see why you say I wrecked anything. Well, you're a drag. You're a drag, man. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were talking about Hickenlooper.
Yes, yes.
And Hickenlooper yesterday had a town hall.
I believe this was yesterday, but...
It was
last
night.
The day this happened is not important.
It was last night.
It was last night.
Okay,
and he was with Dana Bash, CNN. And he revealed something very important about himself.
Right. And you want to listen to that now?
Yeah.
You want to see it?
Yeah, I'd love that.
All right.
You want to see an X-rated movie?
Wait. We can't have him on helium. Wait. You can't have Hip and Pick and Looper on helium.
No.
That's just ridiculous. It's hard to imagine a better word than Hickenlooper to say on helium. So, I just want the audience to know that not once has Stu cracked even a smile. He does not find this funny or entertaining in the least. It's a fair summary of where I am. Yes. It's a fair summary. All right. But here's John Hickenlooper on CNN last night.
You went to see an X-rated movie with your mother. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you so much for that question.
Anytime.
I thought it was better to write a book to let people really see who you were and the dumb things you did as well as the smart things.
And where is that on the spectrum?
On the dumb side.
Okay.
I was the youngest of four, and as I said, my dad died right after I turned eight. And my mother
disturbing.
And I had a pretty tempestuous relationship. She was just the most amazing person. And I went off to college, and for the first time, she was alone in the house. And I didn't realize how powerful that was. Till I got home at Thanksgiving, and I called a friend in Philadelphia, and these were I didn't know what an X movie was. We thought it was a little naughty,
right.
But we didn't think it was that bad.
Again,
you gotta understand, I was 18 years old. So I came home, and my mother hated to cook. I mean, she was a
Can
strong...
Can we stop for just a second? Seriously. An 18-year-old.
Right.
That didn't know what an X-rated movie
and
was.
And wait till you hear the title.
That he didn't know it was an X-rated movie. Come on. It's a total.
All right, go ahead.
Who got stuff done in her own right. And I got home and she had this huge dinner laid out. And I said, I promised Jed that we would go to the movie theater and see this new movie. You want to come? And it's an X movie. I don't know. I was sure that she wouldn't say no. I made a mistake. And she said, I'd love to go because she didn't want to be left alone in the house again.
It was a pretty famous movie, too.
So I took my mother to see Deep Throat. The first scene is. I didn't ask the question. But I will tell you that my mother was, I'm sure she was mortified, and I said repeatedly, I think we should leave, I think we should go. And my mother was the kind of person that rarely went to a movie. She thought almost every movie would get on TV. Obviously not this one. But she really, once she paid, she was going to stay. And at the end, she knew that I was humiliated.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So John Hickenlooper went with his mom to Deep Throat. But he, at 18, which is a lie because he was actually 20, Deep Throat didn't come out till he was 20 years old. So he takes his mom at 20 years old to Deep Throat. So, let me just ask the listener, doesn't the world seem to make sense when we tell you this story of a man who's running to be president of the United States? It makes so much more sense when you say it in this voice.
Nothing, nothing, nothing.
I know,
nothing.
I know.
He wrecked it.
No, it was very. I thought you guys
we
loved
could
it.
Do that.
You
know
guys
what?
Laughed a lot. I thought you loved it.
From here on out, 8:30 Thursdays, Helium.
Helium Thursdays.
Helium
I love
Thursdays.
It. I love it.
Stu,
yes.
Gone.
Perfect time.
Take
for
a
it.
Break.
Think about this Democrat field, though. You've got Hickenlooper who took his mom when he was 20 years old.
Wait,
Deep Throat.
Let me ask you this. He said it was an X movie. No, I've never heard anyone refer to an X-rated movie as an X movie.
No. I never have either.
No. I mean, he's still... I'm just being honest here. No, you're not. Nobody says X movie.
Right, he's like trying to seem unfamiliar with the
correct. Exactly. Yeah. Correct.
Exactly. And to, for anybody at that time, in that moment, who's an adult, a 20-year-old human being, everybody knew
in
what
college.
That movie was about. Everybody
in college.
Knew.
It's not like,
come on.
It's not like Jimmy Stewart where they're on the dance floor and it opens up to be the pool.
Right.
You know what I
while
mean?
While they're doing the Charleston.
While they're doing the Charleston. Hey. It wasn't that world. He was in college. What year was that?
72.
1972 in 72. College.
Come
I
on.
Don't know what an X movie is.
And
come
stop
on.
It. Stop it. So you got that guy. You got Beto, who we found out yesterday, took poop out of his baby's diaper, put it in a bowl, and served it to his wife, telling her it was an avocado.
And that's different from him fantasizing
about
running
killing
over children.
Children mm-hmm. when he was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. You got Andrew Yang, who suddenly decided that circumcision is a presidential issue somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And says that we should not circumcise anymore. You got Bernie Sanders, who sat around naked at a dinner table with a bunch of Soviets in the Soviet Union on his honeymoon. You've got...
Well, not to mention he said that women fantasize about being raped over
right.
and over again.
Right.
Another weird one.
I think we should go back to the helium.
It will be more tolerable.
It would be.
Right?
Much more tolerable.
Oh, man.
Thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate it.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We have Patrick Carelci. He is the host of Red Pilled America, but I'd like him to spend just less than a minute telling us who he is, because he was nominated for a Pulitzer by Andrew Breitbart for a series that he did that I remember covering on Fox that was truly terrifying during the Obama administration. Welcome to the program, Patrick.
Thanks for having me, Glenn.
You bet. Tell people, remind them of what you exposed during the Obama administration on that particular topic.
Yeah, back in 2009, I was invited to a White House conference call, and the meeting looked kind of weird. It looked like they were going to be trying to do some kind of a switcheroo with the big National Endowment for the Arts and potentially use it to put out propaganda. So I went to the meeting, and it was a conference call meeting, a bunch of people on it, 100 people or so. Media was on it. Artists were on it. And I recorded the phone call. It was with my iPhone, and it was before we all started, you know, using these iPhones in that way. And I remember you asking me about that back then. So I recorded the call and basically caught them for what many people were saying. It was a violation of the Hatch Act, which is basically you can't use federal funds to push policy. Mm-hmm. And so I did a story on it, published it with Breitbart News. You helped me put it out there nationally on your show at the time. And somebody ended up, they initially denied it and said that nothing was going wrong and kind of started attacking me behind the scenes. And then eventually somebody resigned from the White House. So it ended up being kind of my first big story, my first big foray into storytelling. It was a multiple-part series, and now here I am.
Now here you are, you don't have a, you never went to school for this, you're an applied physicist, but now you're doing something that I think is really important. You've got a podcast called Red Pilled America, and you're on the third part now, The Virtual Organism. Explain what this is.
We did a series deep dive into Silicon Valley. And, you know, I think you speak a lot about AI and the problems with AI and what it's going to be doing to us in society. And we take a real deep dive into Silicon Valley, and we kind of touch on this topic that basically some of our biggest fears are kind of already here. I mean, you have this huge collection of human beings and data and computing. And we look at Silicon Valley and some of these organizations as virtual organisms because they have become so powerful. They control so much of our lives. we speak a lot about Hollywood and how basically, and you know, we criticize Hollywood and the way that they come at us. Hollywood is a one-way street. They spew their ideas and their messages at us, but it's only one way. With Silicon Valley, it's a two-way street in that they follow us everywhere that we go. They know everything that we do. They know all of our friends. And guess what? They have a political ideology as well. And if you don't follow that political ideology, they hurt you. So we basically look at the story of YouTube, the origin story of YouTube, to kind of get an understanding of these big organizations and where they came from, how they got so big. And that's what we do in part one. We basically look at the Vimeo, which really was the very first video hosting site. And,
right.
And we look at them and see how basically YouTube stole the idea from them and how they basically created this huge – it was one of the hugest value transfers mm-hmm. in modern history by using copyright and basically disregarding copyright. And they basically took Hollywood's value away from them and benefited from that. And they were able to use certain laws that they passed about a decade or so earlier. So – We really go into the Silicon Valley thing, and the main point that I'm trying to get through with this series, and once again, it's Red Pilled America, it's on the iHeartRadio app. The main point I'm trying to get across is we need to start looking at these companies differently, because they've created digital town halls that we are having a problem having the ability to speak within.
Mm-hmm.
And conservatives and the right, we like to look at these things as private property and, oh, okay, we shouldn't be touching these things. But there's a completely different thing going on here. It's brand new. And if they've created the digital streets, the digital sidewalks, the digital town halls that we are going to be talking on, we have to be able to speak at these places. And there's been Supreme Court rulings on this, Marsh versus Alabama, where private property in these company towns back in the day, it's been ruled that even if it's private property, if they own the town hall, we still have the ability to speak at these locations. So we delve into all of these topics in this three-part series.
We're talking to Patrick Carelci. He is from redpilledamerica.com. You can find his podcast, Red Pilled America, on the iHeartRadio app, and it is well worth your time. He is looking at things and looking from the angle of, red state America, but not a sellout to it, just asking the questions that you would ask. Patrick, I am. Have you read Surveillance Capitalism yet, the book?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so I disagree with a lot of stuff in it, but it is a very good look at what is coming and what they truly are working on. And the most chilling understanding. I mean, as I read this book, I'm looking at this technology and what's coming out of Silicon Valley and all the algorithms and their search for the ultimate AI much differently now. I mean, I've understood it enough to be frightened by it and excited by it, but I am understanding it in a new way in this way, Patrick. And what they're looking for is 100% certainty. So they're looking at our patterns, and for instance, Facebook can tell you you're on your way, you're going to cheat or you're going to get a divorce. And they can just tell, they know who's doing it or going to do it because the pattern is there and they have so much data. And they're looking for more and more data to be able to predict with absolute certainty. Once they can predict with absolute certainty, they can then shape us any way they need to shape us to nudge us. I mean, it is the ultimate Cass Sunstein. We don't need advertisers and people to nudge us. The algorithms will nudge us. And that kind of power in anybody's hands, I don't care if it's government or the private industry, is very dangerous for any republic, any free people.
You know, we spoke to when we spoke to the creator of Vimeo. He's a programmer, and he had a very poignant comment that I think kind of touches on what you just said there. He said that the philosophy of the creator gets embedded in the creation, mm-hmm. that their morality, their values, their crazy ideas, they all become part of the fabric of the algorithms that they create. So when you have this enormous, these enormously powerful companies in Silicon Valley that are admittedly hard left, they can't, their values are embedded into this code. So like using the example that you just said about adultery or cheating, these, a lot of these algorithms are maximized for clicks. They want to, they want interaction. And so if they see that kind of behavior coming, they can actually encourage it. Mm-hmm. Because they understand that what kinds of things is going to make this person in this state of mind click. And you know, it becomes this very, you know, how do we solve this problem? And I think that's the big discussion that we need to be having right now. We all understand that there's a major issue. It's really now, what do we do about this? What policies should be enacted? And I am in the same camp as you in that I fear that the government will try to grab the steering wheel and move it in their direction and try to take as much advantage of this as they possibly can. But I also fear that our representatives aren't speaking about this as much. We only have really Ted Cruz, when Mark Zuckerberg was on the kind of being interrogated by the committee, Ted Cruz is really the only guy that was really asking the kinds of questions that we need to be asking right here. And that really makes me wonder, why is it that Ted Cruz was the only guy that was really kind of hitting him on some of these questions? We need to be having a major discussion and put aside our rigid ideologies about how we should be dealing with these private companies, because this is a different thing that we have going on. They know more about us than any government agency has ever known about any U.S. citizen.
Oh, if Hitler would have had half of this technology, there would not be a Jew left on Earth.
So true, so true. And so, you know, I would really love if people would take the time, check out Red Pilled America. It's on the iHeartRadio app. Take the time to really delve into these issues and understand that there is something different going on here, that these people have they're creating these digital nation states. It is our projection, our real-life projection of ourself is now being projected online. Facebook, for example, they have become the identity of our online identity. They actually authenticate our online identity. When they take you off of Facebook, you lose the ability to easily log in to thousands of websites from there. And what does that do to human beings when that happens? How are they ostracized when that happens? These are the kinds of things that we need to be talking about. I've heard a lot of people speak about, okay, we need a digital bill of rights. I think we already have a bill of rights, and we just need to basically apply it online.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, Patrick, and then I'll cut you loose. Should we be breaking them up?
You know, it's something that a lot of people are talking about. I'm not a policy expert. I've heard multiple different approaches to this. Breaking up is one of them. I've heard of people talking about transparency in the code. That if we have a transparency in what they're doing, that could help solve the problem. Breaking up is definitely, I think, should be on the table, because they keep gobbling up their competition. Mm-hmm. Facebook gobbles up Instagram. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime they gobble up WhatsApp, anytime another one of these social media things start to rise up, Google gobbles up YouTube. There's a reason why they're doing it. They understand the network effects of having these massive amounts of users and how they could benefit from that.
Yeah.
So I do think that it should be on the table, but I think there's also other things that we should be looking at as well.
Patrick, thank you so much. It is Red Pilled America. You can find it at redpilledamerica.com. The podcast, really well worth your time. This is the third in the series, is it not?
Yes. Yes, it is.
And they're all worth listening to, and you'll find it on the iHeartRadio app. Patrick, thank you so much.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Matt Kibbe is joining us. Matt does a podcast on the Blaze Network and Blaze Media, and you need to watch it. And he's doing something different. He is really targeting those libertarians and especially the youth that are not into the GOP. You know, they're not necessarily listening to, you know, Mark Levin or Glenn Beck. They're coming at it from a different place. And Matt has put together a great coalition, actually globally, of people who are thinking about freedom in the way a millennial does. So it's well worth your time to check out Matt Kibbe's podcast. Matt, we saw last night New Zealand just banned everything, went farther than anybody has ever talked about in New Zealand, and they're celebrating today. Did they not just make this crazy shooter the king of New Zealand?
He now owns their fears, right?
Right.
And they're seizing guns that were legally purchased and owned by citizens of New Zealand, and they just did it in a panic overnight. And you hope something like that could never happen in America. And you get into all of these definitions. You know, they say they're targeting military-style assault weapons, which is not a thing.
It's not.
It's not a thing. But and so there'll be an arbitrary line where they decide, is that gun still legal? Is that gun not? They don't know. All they know is that people have to turn in their guns.
You know, what's amazing to me is Hannah, my second oldest daughter, I took her shooting. Now, she's never gone shooting, but we had a family scare that kind of put the fear of Jesus in all of us. So we went out to the shooting range, and she finally said, I'll carry a gun, Dad, and I'll learn how to shoot. She came down. Now, she's been with us for, I mean, forever, but she's always avoided guns. She, you know, bought into the fear of them. And so we're at the shooting range, and she says, so, Dad, what's the difference between that rifle and that one? And I said, what do you mean by that one? She said, that one, I mean, that looks scary. And I said, because it's painted black. They're the same.
Yeah.
They're the same.
Yeah. And there is a cultural divide, and I think it's grown starker. And you know, we talk about red versus blue, but there is a different culture of people who grew up with guns, are taught how to use guns, are comfortable around guns, and protect their families with guns versus people primarily that live in cities are just afraid of them. They've never touched one. They've never seen one. They don't know what it is. And so when political demagogues show up and say, this is how we're going to empower terrorists to kill all of us, as Chuck Schumer just said about 3D printed guns, and you don't know any better, that's a problem. So part of what I learned the hard way, I had a very similar experience when I worked on Capitol Hill. I worked for a member of Congress. He was inclined to be a liberty guy, but he'd never been around guns. And we were debating assault weapons bans. And I used all the Second Amendment arguments. I used the philosophical arguments, the libertarian arguments about the right to defend yourself. Deaf ears. He didn't understand what I was saying. So I said, okay, let's go shoot some of these things. And we asked the guy at the FBI range, like, so we're going to ban these ones, and we're not going to ban these ones. And he said the same thing. That one's painted black, and it looks really scary, but it is exactly like that one with the wood stock. And after that, he's like, okay, I get it. So you got to help people actually sort of see what it is, understand what it is, and put your hands on it. It's an empirical thing.
It's also what we've talked about a lot. You were talking to him logically.
Right.
And conservatives try to, you know, use facts and figures and everything else and speak logic, where the left generally tells a story and speaks from emotion.
Right.
And so they're telling you this good story of this scary black gun and all the scary things that it can do. And emotionally, that imprints on people. And it imprints it so hard that it exaggerates the fear that you should have. I spent some time talking to my daughter about separating your fear. There is the fear of that's a black, scary gun. And then there's the fear of this is a deadly weapon, and this is just as deadly as this one. And you should have a healthy amount of fear. If you lose your fear of what this thing can do, you should not have a gun.
Yeah.
You know, you should always have a healthy amount of fear of this is a deadly weapon. But it's the irrational fear, and we don't ever approach that. But getting people into the range and having them fire, they experience something else. Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, you know, we set out this this video that you mentioned about 3D guns. It's a young guy named Matt LaRousse. He's one of the young voices. I think you've had some of those guys on. Young libertarians that are very into explaining things on camera. And he's an interesting guy because he's actually a legal scholar at the Cato Institute. Wow. But before that, he was a machinist. And he's a gun enthusiast, and he's reconstructing all of these old, like, World War One rifles that don't exist anymore. And it, and he's kind of a hobbyist about it. So he understands the law. He understands the technology of 3D printing. And we just had him sort of show people, this is what this actually is. So when some senator says something ridiculous about ghost guns and how we're going to be empowering terrorists by allowing 3D printers where you can, you know, you can actually empower kids that need prosthetic limbs with 3D printers. These are good things. This is technology, and everybody wants to control it in Washington. And you could make the philosophical arguments. This violates the First Amendment. This violates the Second Amendment. Or you could just show people the ridiculousness of the idea that you could build a ghost gun. It's not a thing. It's a mythology.
Why is it not a thing?
Because by ghost, they're talking about something, you know, in your mind, you're thinking that's a totally plastic assault rifle, right?
Yeah, that won't work.
And it doesn't work. It explodes.
Right.
And
you'll kill yourself. Congratulations.
Is the one that dies.
Yeah.
And so everybody has this vision of people sneaking these guns on airplanes or whatever, and it's just not a thing.
Hmm. I'm fascinated to see this reaction, too, on the emotion. Because the emotion can be helpful to convey a message. You guys have talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
But you see in New Zealand where, you know, emotion makes a lot of bad decisions, and it forces you into bad decisions. With this ban, I mean, if you think about this, because it's being praised by the media and the left and people all over the world as, look, they know how to do it right.
Right.
They had this incident and they took action, period. They took action based on that incident. I mean, you could make the same argument that if there is a terrorist attack by a Muslim, that's the great reason to go round up Muslims all across the country, because
exactly
we
right.
don't know. Of course, yes, we're going to be taking a lot of law-abiding Muslims off the streets, too.
Look,
yes, I understand that. But look, this just happened, and we have to act. That's a terrible approach.
This
should be recognized.
Well, that's where the Patriot Act came from.
Yes.
We acted out of emotion instead of reason.
Yes. And that's where the Constitution should kick in and say, uh-uh.
That's what
you can't do that.
Yeah.
It was meant to slow you down or to stop you from doing things because you had an irrational amount or even a rational amount of fear that would make you sell your liberty or someone else's liberty because of your fear.
You know, Terry and I reacted out of emotion a couple of years ago and finally learned and how to shoot pistols. And we bought pistols in the District of Columbia, which is a not an easy thing to do.
No.
But it wasn't. I mean, I've always understood the importance of our right to bear arms, but I'm not a gun guy.
Yeah.
But I watched, you know, the emotional trigger for me was watching the shooting in Paris, the Eagles of Death Metal, and their audience was gunned down by terrorists. And I go to a lot of concerts, and I'm like, you know what? I live right by the Capitol. I better do something. I better be prepared to defend my family if I have to. And there's almost that safety, security sense, the same reason that people react against guns. We react saying, you know what? The police aren't going to help me. The government's not going to help me. They can't possibly keep us all safe. I got to do it myself.
And it's amazing because you learn that time and time again. And yet the media never covers it when you have a disaster like Katrina, where help cannot come and it's not there. You have 72 hours before it completely breaks down. And what did the government do? Went in and took guns.
And you say the media doesn't cover it, but that's why Matt Kibbe has a podcast.
That's exactly
That's
right.
why it exists, with fantastic guests like Glenn Beck, right? Thomas Massey's been on already.
That is an amazing plug, and I fully endorse everything that you just said.
Where do people go to get it? They can get it anywhere podcasts.
You can get it anywhere, Blaze TV, YouTube, anywhere you download a podcast, and we'll talk about guns, and we'll talk about it from a perspective that about safety, and we're going to talk about all sorts of cool stuff.
Yeah, Matt Kibbe, grab the Matt Kibbe podcast. Matt, thank you for stopping by.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Well, there is something that has happened in Washington State that I believe is unconstitutional, along with others. It was voted on in November of last year, and it was Initiative 1639, and it was approved by voters in Washington State. And the deal is that you have to have more restrictive gun laws. You can't buy a gun if you're 21, unless you're 21. Anybody under the age of 21 cannot purchase. You have to have an enhanced background check, which goes into medical records now, which is also a violation. And you have to always have that gun locked up. And, you know, as I was taught growing up, you know, in Washington State by my uncle in Puyallup and my grandfather who had guns loaded, an unloaded gun does nothing to protect you. The problem is the sheriffs are starting to say, we're not going to enforce this. And the sheriffs are now in trouble with the state. And we have Bob Songer. He is a sheriff of Klickitat County in Washington State. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Glenn. And, you know, you're spot on with your opening remarks here.
Bob, you're one of the sheriffs, and there's a lot of you around Washington State that are saying, I'm not going to enforce this. What does that mean?
Well, first of all, let me say that I'm a constitutional sheriff. The rule of law is the Constitution, U.S. and Washington State Constitution. So based on that, I believe it violates the citizens that I serve, their Second Amendment, Fourth Amendment, and probably several other amendments of the Constitution. And it's a ridiculous thing. And be honest with you, Glenn, Bob Ferguson, our Attorney General, and Governor Inslee, this is a political move on their part. Ferguson wants to be governor. And, of course, our governor has already announced he wants to be president, which would be a disaster. But in any event, they're violating good, honest citizens' rights. And I've been in this business 48 years in law enforcement. And this 1639 or any of these other anti-gun laws will do nothing to make a safer community. Nothing. That's why crooks are crooks. They don't pay any attention to laws. And so what they're doing is making it more restrictive and criminalizing honest citizens for possessing certain firearms. And it's ridiculous.
And also criminalizing those who just served in the military and were given a rifle by the military. And they were OK for the use of a gun, but not when they come home. They can't have a gun.
Isn't that ridiculous? We put our young people on battlefields overseas, and they come back, some of them missing limbs, some of them shot up, and the lucky ones that come back that haven't been injured, they go down to buy a semi-automatic rifle, which, by the way, they're calling all semi-automatics assault weapons, which mm-hmm. is just ridiculous.
It's modern sporting rifle.
Exactly. So they go down to buy a gun for whatever reason, because they have a constitutional right to that firearm. And they're told, no, you can't have it, regardless whether you served our country or not.
And yet the same people who have this, 21-year age limit on buying guns want to give you the power of the vote at 16. But that's a different story. So your attorney general in the state says that you guys, by not enacting this and by not enforcing this, you are in violation, and the sheriffs work for the governor. And
I'm sorry, Glenn. I'm sorry.
So you disagree with the sheriff's work for the governor?
The governor or the attorney general is not my boss. The only boss I have under the Constitution is the people that elected me to office in our county. That's it. Commissioner's not my boss. So, I mean, they would probably love to have that position where they could rein me in, but no, that's not going to happen. And I think Ferguson and them, they're pushing this for political reasons. And I might add, the only reason this passed in the state is because they blew a bunch of smoke at the far left in King County, Snohomish, Tacoma, the heavy populated areas of the state, and was able to squeak it by. They wanted, of all the voters, I think there was like a turnout of 30% of the voters in the state. Of that, of course, they I think they got close to a 60% vote on it. But most counties on the east side of the state voted it down, the majority of them.
This is another reason in a microcosm of why we have the Electoral College for the presidency. Western Washington is very different than Eastern Washington. Most people think, oh, it rains all the time in Washington. Not on the east side of the mountains. It's a desert in parts of Washington. It's remarkably different state and different mentalities. What are you as a sheriff and the other sheriffs that are with you, what are you going to do? Because they said they are coming after you.
Well, then they need to do that. I will not back down from Ferguson or Inslee, our governor. They are not my boss. I serve the citizens of my county, and I believe I am serving their constitutional rights to prevent that from being violated. So if they want to come into our county, then they need to do that. And I think the governor said, well, we'll have the state patrol. No, they don't want to go down that route. And let me say one thing up front. I will not take arms against fellow law enforcement officers. Will not. But I also will not allow the state to come in here and start pushing us around in this county. It's not going to happen. The other thing, if I could, Glenn, here's what bothers me, is the health records that when they do that enhanced background check, you sign a waiver, basically, giving up your health records, which I believe is coercion. In order for you to get the gun, you have to sign this.
Mm-hmm.
In order for you to get the gun that you're entitled to, God-given right under the Second Amendment, you have to sign this waiver. Now, I don't have any problem at all, and I would even support if somebody's been committed to a mental institution or under psychiatric care for violent-type behavior, then yes, only that would be released. So that could be checked in a background. But they don't have any reason to have your complete health records to know what's going on there. And unfortunately, under that 1639, Glenn, they don't even show who makes that decision. I don't know if it's some clerk at DOL, Department of Licensing, that makes that decision, or whether it's a board of psychiatrists. Or, you know, it's just vague. And I think that violates your Fourth Amendment right when they coerce you into signing that form in order to get a gun. Mandatory training, the same thing. I'm a big one for training. I'm a big one for safety. But it should not be government mandating you have to have that before you can have your rights having a gun. And it's just ridiculous. One of the things I'd like to read real quick is fairly short. The NIF, under the 1639, the initiative would make government employees or any contractor or private agency working for the government immune from lawsuits for failing to recognize the rights of a person to legally buy or possess a firearm, including...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, including unlawful denial of a concealed weapons permit. Under the initiative, citizens could not sue if their civil rights are violated.
Oh, my gosh.
Unreal.
Oh, my gosh. Bob, stay strong. Let us know how we can help the sheriffs up in Washington State. We appreciate you standing for the Constitution, sir.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate your support.
You bet. Bye-bye.
You'd feel really confident that someone like that was actually guarding the Constitution if you lived in that county.
I will tell you, this is what we talked about. Remember how many years ago did we say, you've got to support your local sheriffs. Get to know your local sheriff. Because constitutionally, they don't report to anybody. They report directly to the voter. And they are your last line of defense for the Constitution. So the most important vote you can cast in your lifetime, when things start to get scary, is your sheriff, because he's the last line of defense for the Constitution.
And think about it. Simultaneously, you have a bill that includes a piece that will not let you sue if they violate your Second Amendment rights.
Civil rights.
At the same time, they're now saying you can sue gun manufacturers if someone uses a gun in a crime.
Right. And they can sue you, and you will be held responsible. If somebody steals your gun and uses it in a crime, you are held responsible for that crime as well. That's in this new law.
Unreal.
I mean, you want to talk about oppressive. That is the beginnings of a totalitarian state.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.